Welcome to Dude, Where's My ROI, where we host experienced marketers who are all about zero fluff and 100% ROI. In today's episode, you learn about the business of tech, the future of AR, VR, brand building, and much more. Our guest today is Arnav Neel Ghosh, a futurist, a mentor, and a commercial leader. Enjoy this conversation where we explored the journey from the good old days of advertising to present-day marketing.
I think one single philosophy that really guided me in my career is curiosity. I think if you really look at right from the days of Google to social media to immersive technology to, I've seen through it. And I think there were pivotal moments. And I think I've been very lucky to be alive and see a churn of a century, right? Through what Y2K was all about and then look at how digital evolved and how social media evolved, how, and today the world that we live in have come really a full circle. So I think in this entire journey, as I said, the one thread that run across is really curiosity in trying to understand and do what's next, take a risk. I have failed miserably as well because I really didn't think through before taking a risk. I just jumped on the next new thing as I thought that maybe that's something is going to be drive popular, or be exciting enough. So I think that's about it, really.
I have actually seen a lot of firsts in your career. Like, you have been responsible for Orange Tuesdays, which is still now a product or a property which is running. Yeah. And you have also launched it, I think, in abroad, and then you have brought it here.
Correct.
Even I could see you have been a first mover in the AR/VR space, and this was at a time when digital marketing or social media was on the rise, and that's the time you jumped on AR/VR because that time people were grappling with digital marketing.
Correct.
I think Blipper was maybe ahead of its time, right?
Yeah, look, if you really look at three key influencers which have really led me to what I do and my schools of thought, right? One is Pink Floyd, right? I always felt you need to create a brand which is enduring. Right. Number one. And I think loyalty is very, very key. You cut across, look at AR, VR, digital, analog, the days of great advertising, right? All you want to do is acquire customers, ensure that they stay with you and there is less of churn, right? If you really look at and community building, today the focus is how do you build strong communities for marketing, right?
Right.
And if you really look at the greatest brands today, if you look at Pink Floyd as a brand, it cuts across generations. The music they had, perfect, the way they played it. Then you look at guys like say Mr. Musk, right? He gave it all. He took a risk. He was the first mover always. Talk about SpaceX, you talk about Tesla, you talk about, right? So, and he failed. It's not that he put his money where his mouth was, right? And SpaceX failed for the first few years, even if he had went through the last launch of a reusable rocket, right?
Right.
Had that failed, you never would have seen SpaceX now what it was, right? Even Tesla, when he started, it was something new, right?
Right.
So these were really inspiring. It is obviously easy to say that, they have inspired me, right? But the point is they really attributed a philosophy of thinking and life, right? And I think the beginning of the decade, really, right? We are sitting on the beginning of another decade, but the beginning of 2010s, so the end of 2010s, when we started looking at immersive tech, right? We always felt with the philosophy that this is exciting. This is going to be the next big thing. And we always thought that augmented reality or mixed reality or virtual reality or AI, blockchain, whatever you hear and get thrown around today, right, is going to be the future of communication, marketing, computing, whatever you call it. So we just wanted to ensure that why not now, right? Why do it when everybody else is doing it? Why not start now and see where it takes us, right?
Right.
So I think that's been, as I said, exciting. There were a lot of bumps on the road as well, but I'm at a point where I don't regret.
Yeah, definitely not, because all the examples which you gave, all the stories which you mentioned, they are all examples of people who actually pushed from zero to one.
Correct.
And there is a simpler way that you can take something what is working and build the same old thing. Like, let's talk about agencies in that sense.
Correct.
So if the agency model is working, then I have the choice to start another agency and work from there. But you chose the other road, which is crazy, which is really commendable. Right now, what are you up to?
Well, I think one of the things that I've learned along the way is that when you take a risk, when you look at young, there are a certain point of time, I was also young, right? And when I was...
You're young, man. You're young.
I mean, of course, yes. But the point is, when you look at nurturing leadership, right?
Right.
I always believe that either you talk about the ideas business in advertising, which I was also part of in the early part of my career.
Right.
You look at the technology business, you look at the consumer marketing business, any business you talk about today, right? I think every business, you have the product as the hero, but ultimately it is the people who are the real products, right? So I believe that the way I have been nurtured, I have found the right guidance in my life at critical junctures. Right. People who believed in me and people who said, hey, maybe we can join hands and we see, let's grow together. We see a potential in you and stuff like that. Sure. So what I do today is obviously I help. The point is you have a lot of people talking science today, right? You have a lot of people talking technology, right? But the business of technology, the commerce of technology, as to how you make sense, ultimately when we were in advertising, there was this, how do I call it? We had I used to still call them threatened species, called the strategic account planners, right?
Okay.
Because people didn't found any relevance of what they did, right?
Yeah.
But if you really look at account planner, their job was to identify that problem, identify the need gap, and trying to create a powerful idea, right? Which solved a business problem. Right.
Sure.
That still holds true for any technology that you bring into the table as a platform, as a product. It doesn't matter which form factor it is in. Right. Mm. So what I do currently is I look at how can I help businesses to use technology, but in a more human way of trying to solve their problem and not trying to. There are a lot of people. There are hundreds of people doing the same thing. Right. So how do you help them to navigate and help them to extricate or extract the right value, number one.
Right.
And number two, there are a lot of startups, there are a lot of young guys who are doing some great stuff, right? Idea is to find, nurture them, help them to grow and find the next generation of leaders of the country, really. I think that's what I do. Yeah.
So I've seen you're also working with students at NID.
Correct.
So what is that experience like? Wherein these guys are fresh minds and they must be coming up with crazy
absolutely.
Ideas.
The idea is that as I was talking to somebody else yesterday, that in our days in the communication business, right, we used to say that hey, this guy is a senior VP, right? So he's a senior VP because he will know more than what an AE does, right? So, but the point is that is flipped because he had access to more content. He had access to more knowledge.
Sure.
Right. Nowadays, that is flip because a guy who was probably born when you started working, right, now has more information that you do because he has access to more information, he has access to more tools. So the point is, at the end of the day, you need to really, really find and understand and nurture those guys who will come and question you, right?
Right.
Who will come and question ideas, who have got great, brilliant ideas. But you need to find a way to nurture them, right?
Sure.
You know, they have, maybe the ideas are not relevant today, right? But the idea is that the problem that we have is in terms of philosophically is that if somebody is asking money from you, right? Will you give that guy the money or will you empower that guy to find a job so that he'll never ask for money again?
Right.
So what do you do? So idea is you talk to these guys and they are brilliant guys, right? They have got some great ideas. They want to solve a problem, right? They want to become entrepreneurs. They have got a vision of creating or running a billion-dollar industry. So how do you hold their hands, tell them that, hey, take a step back, maybe do these few things so that your idea gets the right focus, build a great product. And I think I always personally believed that it is the most difficult part is to build, right? It is easier to walk into an existing brand. I'm not putting that down, but I think the difficult part of doing a business is that when you go and build something, and that process of building something, either a product or a market, right, is that what gives you the leverage and the experience that you want to create a successful business model, right? So I think I have, so all that I say that young guys at NID or wherever I go, right, they have got some outlandish ideas, some great ideas. All they want and need is the right guidance, right? And the right hope, right? So I think maybe you probably, hey, a right business idea, you connect them to a guy who might fund in them, right? Or you might want to find them the right mentor, right? Or you might want to work with them to see that their product might need a little more tweaking, or get them connected to a business guy, or to the same industry, or to a similar industry where the idea may have some relevance. So I think these are the things, and once you help them to find that sweet spot, I know that's where you feel, hey, probably I have done a good job, and really move on, right? I think that's where maybe an NID or a couple of other places where I get to interact with students. Yeah,
awesome. That's actually, it not only gives you a chance to work with these guys, but it also gives you a chance to connect with maybe leaders of the future.
Absolutely.
One thing which is very interesting, which you mentioned about, when I look at all the interaction that we had till now, one is the generation that you were born in, on that we were born in, right? That is a generation where technology actually changed in front of us.
Correct.
Right. Versus the students who are technology natives, like they got born into a generation where internet actually existed, and everything was like mobile phones were actually handed over to them. Like I had to actually earn for my mobile phone myself and actually buy it and then experience it. And it was a shitty phone when I look at it now. Like it was not a smartphone.
Right.
But these guys have been born into this generation of smartphones. So your journey has been from that past, wherein if you look at it, I think looking back, you would see how over a period of time everything changed.
Right.
Like I still imagine the time of handheld phones, or else those phones with dialers and all, and to the point where those landlines don't exist right now.
Correct.
You're all just dealing with mobile technology, or else maybe Zoom calls or something. Like entire lockdown, imagine if lockdown would have happened then, it would have been a crazy world, right?
Correct.
So having said all of this, when you look back over these years and look at which are the campaigns, few marketing campaigns, which you must have said, you must have seen, and you must have been like, dude, yeah, this is crazy. This is what it is. Which was that one marketing campaign?
I think lots, really. When we started looking at advertising, right? All of us have read David Ogilvy's books.
Right.
At 60 second miles per hour, the only thing that you hear is the clock ticking, right? The Volkswagen ad, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and the ad about oral cancer, right? It said that the moment you have cancer, let's start by removing the lump in your throat. Right. So I started getting inspired by some great copywriting, right, which focused on creatively on solving the problem. Right. If you look at, humor was a big part of communication then. Right. Amul still inspires us every day. Right. Then Volkswagen was a constant and innovative brand then, which used to do Think Small was a great campaign that resonated with me. Then obviously, as you moved along, there have been hundreds and thousands of campaigns. Example, if you're in India, the Cadbury ad with that girl getting onto the cricket pitch, right? The ads of Fevicol, right? Brilliantly executed, right? Still, I say that the power of an idea across any business, right? I mean, we often talk about marketing technology and advertising technology and stuff like that, right? Technology might enable that idea, but if you don't have that idea, technology is not to work, right? And of course, purpose-driven conversations, right? Gillette's Me Too movement, for example. Then Old Spice, right? Old Spice campaign. Yeah. Then over a period of time, as things started moving towards getting more immersive, retailers like Timberland, IKEA, they started looking at the Project Color app, where you could actually, if you want to buy something, and if you want to, before you want to buy, you want to put some stuff in your room.
Yeah.
So how can you do that? So AR, VR's initial imaginative landscape was started by innovative brands like IKEA. So that resonates a lot. Then the very simple communication conversation that WHO does have done for COVID-19, right? Yeah. I think that resonates as well as to how can you, obviously you have to live with it, right? But it's all about hope, right? It's all about hope.
Sure.
So I think then I will obviously talk about Blippers campaign. I think one that we have been very proud of and we have won a lot of awards globally was when Blipper, Coke and Spotify came together to convert Coke can into a jukebox, right?
Wow.
Where you could use an augmented reality Blipper app. You can obviously use not an augmented reality Blipper app, but a Blipper app to scan the Coke can, and it actually gave you give you live music and depending on where you are, right?
Wow.
So turned a Coke can you usually would throw away into a piece of probably something that you want to carry home and keep it. So as a brand, it was like internet of things, not internet on things.
Right. So it basically becomes like a showpiece, which you would
store.
Awesome.
So these are probably few, and there are more, obviously, right? But if these are 5-6 that stands out, right?
What I really love about that answer is how you actually drew the entire evolution from where things actually started, from, let's say, Ogilvy and copywriting, and you brought it right till technology, which is crazy. One question which popped in my head when you were narrating all this, and I could visualize that, is do you feel now those were standout campaigns which stood out because there was less noise around us,
right?
But today, when we look, so many things are happening,
right?
How do you get attention?
Again, as I my philosophy has been very simple. My philosophy was that you still need to bank on a great idea.
Right.
Your idea or if you need to stand out, your idea needs to have purpose, right?
Right.
You cannot say that, hey, I am here offering a sweepstake, buy this and get this free. Might always work because that's short term, right? So if you want short term happiness, if you want short term acquisition, if you want your app to have a short shelf life, then you do all this stuff, right? Those are gimmicks, right? Long term, it's all about an idea. Right. And I said idea connected with purpose, right? Idea connected with great design, right? And technology will always, now the emancipation of where technology will play a role in connecting with the consumers or connecting with the business is about how carefully you allow the technology and the idea to find a balance. Right. And there have been few. But what you see today is obviously clutter. Today, end of the day, if you really look up, obviously print has really suffered because of COVID a bit, right? They're making a comeback. But I was going through certain tweets a couple of days back where a business head of a major publisher was very happy because he could print in one of the Hindi dailies, right? In MP, right? They could print, a newspaper had almost 40 additional pages, right? And each of those pages had an ad, right? So he was very happy, but he was very happy because of his business, right? But I wonder that how many of those 40 pages, right, had the attention time of consumers who would really go through and say, hey, right? And for me, I think the biggest clutter breaker today, as I said, right, are ideas with purpose, right? It is not technology. Technology is a function of evolution. Today, if you talk to me, straight away, if you're talking in 2010, we would say that, hey, let's do a great Facebook campaign or let's do something on Orkut, right? And create something, create something magical. Today, those may not be in your priority list. You still want to do Facebook, probably because you they're part of your social media strategy, but you might want to do something else. You might want to say, you know, I want to do something more immersive. I want to do something on which is AI led. I want to do technology is a function of evolution or where you are, right? So the current tech stack will obviously be integrated into the consumer the storytelling process, but it'll be idea with a purpose that will always make anything and everything stand out.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think that's really a valid point. And I think that is what creates a campaign or something which is more foundational. It gives a strong foundation to the message. And actually, it would resonate with the audience so that the coming generations would maybe look at it with awe, or at least from a standpoint, okay, they did this. They did this because
correct,
of this.
Correct, correct, correct.
And that's where they could, maybe they could also learn from it, right?
Correct, correct.
So AR versus VR, right? What can you tell me about that debate? Because I'll tell you where I'm coming from. Like, my past has been in the space of animation and visual effects.
Correct.
So I have been on the front where I have actually worked on maybe asset development for these technologies and all those things. But way back, it was always key VR is the next big thing. And AR sort of was the smaller thing or the smaller denominator. But now I'm seeing the tables reversed. And that's obviously because of the headset or gear which you might need to run VR, but it can run directly on your phone. So how do you see both of these technologies outspreading or growing individually?
I think AR will always be the low-hanging fruit, simply because you have an installed base of smartphones, right? And because because you have already built a behavior on phones, so anything and everything that you do on AR today, right? And AR has got multiple manifests, right? Today, Snapchat will do lens. Today, TikTok obviously is banned, but the special effects people call it, there is a platform right. called Reface. They're all right. filters. They're all lenses, right? But the point is,
sure.
I've always believed that augmented reality at a certain level, when you look at the consumer AR space, right? And the enterprise right. AR space, they are two different animals, right? So sure. When we started with AR in way back in 2011-12, right, it was purely driven by the fact that we wanted to use the power of creativity, right, in augmented reality, create right. something magical and give that magic back to a brand, right? Because and allow right. that magic right. to solve a problem for the brand. Right. So hence a lot of work right. we had done with brands, with agencies, with a lot of businesses globally, right, was to create that magic with AR, right? But augmented reality right. at a right. certain level from those days and now is got a complete sea change, because the downloading a native app was a major challenge for consumers right. because consumers already have a lot of privacy problems, right? And if you're asking consumers to download an app and sure. then ask them to scan certain stuff and then give them information on the brand, there's a lot of inertia in terms of the process that you do to experience the brand, right? So AR
correct.
In the current form and stage, right, where you is becoming predominant consumer AR platform, right, where filters right, and lenses right. are becoming the snacking AR content, right? So I would see them driving AR to
right.
what we have always professed by the analyst as a $20 billion business, right? And augmented reality at a larger level okay. and businesses which are consumer-facing businesses, but which want AR to play a longer game, right? They would probably want to integrate an AR function within their own ecosystem rather than have a third-party plug-and-play happening, because they find that more relevant, easy to push, and easy to right. manage, right? So that is one factor as well, which is driving AR at a larger level, right? Second, consumer sure. and enterprise AR, again, there's a lot of work happening in enterprise AR. Now, classically, AR has got, again, as I said, multiple definitions. You put in filters on social, on Instagram, on Facebook, that's also AR. Right, you create a layer of a digital layer on a piece of tool and use it on a glass to find a match for a product which you want to replace it probably in logistics, right? That's also if you want to use. Right. So the point is, see, AR will always be a low hanging fruit and easy to execute because of the scalability, right? Of people who are already using sure. it, and there have been. Sure. Classical use cases, obviously the one that we always talk about is Pokemon Go, right? Which allowed okay. the perfect example of the digital world, right? You are right. Looking for physical Pokemons, but within a digital environment, but you're looking at location-based experience and looking for that digital Pokemon onto a physical location and trying to get right. that, right? So I think because of scalability, because of the install base, right? AR will always going to be with drive scale, right? But if you want a better experience, right? If you want a better immersive content, which you want to not be dependent on a consumer solution or a consumer gimmick, right? That would be VR, right? Wow. Because
that's actually mapped out a very simple, in simple words, what exactly is the function. So,
and virtual reality at the end of the day is dependent on the form factor, dependent on, and also I think the entire AR, VR, and MR definitions have collapsed. It's XR now, right? So when you talk about XR, VR has got a problem with form factor, and I think also if you want to go back to AR, right? Now, today, in AR also, it's all about the camera, right? You're empowering a mobile camera to create special effects, integrate with some specific features within the camera to give you that experience, right? Now, the similar form factor, you can have an ARable experience in a glass, for example. Right, you can have smart glasses that is coming in, obviously under experimental stage, but there have been smart glasses which are coming into the market as well. And I know a couple of them which are coming in India as well. Right. But there are smart glasses which will give you an AR functionality as well. Essentially, AR functionality meaning they will obviously allow you to lay over a digital layer on top of a physical world. Right. So it could be a phone, it could be a smart glass, it could be any other wearable, which will allow you to do that through a camera. So you have to empower that optics and camera to give you that experience. Virtual reality or a HoloLens or an Oculus Quest or Oculus 2 is going to deliver that experience in a completely different world. Yeah, mixed reality we call it because you give it a VR immersion in a physical world, right? So the point is in a far more deep dive integrated immersion that happens on MR that you would otherwise do on AR, right? But the point is the reason VR has got a is because VR doesn't have installed base, right? So you have to build you have to build a behavior on VR, right? And as I said, VR would need a reason to buy, right? So if you are going to a college and saying that hey, I would want to create immersive education for kids, right? And if you really compare the metric of a kid wearing a VR device and looking at the solar system or looking at a physics problem, right? The ability for them to get that cognitive understanding through that content is probably equivalent to spending 12 hours or 24 hours of studying the same content, right? And they will get more cognitive understanding of what they're trying, and the brain, as they say, retains more if you are telling somebody or if you're putting in front of somebody a very, very compelling visual content. So I think VR really, at the end of the day, is challenged by the install base. It's going to take some time, right? Obviously, you have large platforms like large platforms like Facebook, which is trying to use their scale to drive VR adoption. All right. You have probably Apple coming with their own AR glasses sometime down the road. There are third-party players who are trying to that design on glass, which will allow you not only to wear the glass seamlessly, but move in and out of an immersive world to a physical world more seamlessly with a switch of a button, maybe. So I think VR definitely has potential. VR is more immersive. VR has proven to be more useful in the enterprise world, be it healthcare, be it logistics, be it education, illness, right? VR has had a lot of use cases where if you put a VR headset to somebody who is mentally ill, they have tendency to come back to a slightly healthier state than they were before they started. So therapeutic healthcare is something that has worked for VR. So I think the point is comparison between AR and VR is like chicken and egg. Both will need to, as I said, find a way to solve a problem, right? Obviously, AR is more gimmicky because it's more snacking. You can do filters, you can you create your user-generated content and stuff like that. But the advantage of AR is because it's phone-based.
It's fast.
It's fast. It's got an install base, right? easier to convert, easier to do things. VR depends on a form factor, depends on availability of devices, the people trying to do it. There are amazingly great Indian startups who are trying to create world-class VR products. I know a couple of them who are trying to build it in India, for India, right? Some great world-class VR products. But again, as I said, right, for you to choose between AR and VR, unfortunately, people will say, how many of them do you have out there? Because the metric that people use to differentiate between or drive adoption between an AR, VR, or any other product is they use it as a media metric. How many install base do you
how
have?
How many people are there?
Yeah, right? But I think because VR at the end of the day is certainly more user specific. For example, if you want to create a solution for the oil and gas industry, you create a bespoke solution with a customized VR headset and give it to them. So the install base doesn't really matter, right? It's right. About what capability that the headset can give it to you. And I think there are a lot of hearsay on, and we are all waiting for the right form factor. So we don't know what is the right form factor, but I think at the end of the day, probably by 2025, when we have the right form factor, probably it's as easy as wearing glasses, where the infrastructure will allow you to deliver that content, that user experience. Probably that will be the tipping point of XR, not really AR and VR.
Okay. Yeah. Any interesting projects you have come across on XR or even say this technology right now?
Lots, really. Lots. There have been lots of projects that are happening on XR in agriculture. Okay. There are a lot of exciting projects happening on oil and gas, right?
Can you give us one example? Because what I am fascinated about is how does an industry like agriculture use this?
The point is, look, there are ways where people are probably wanting to. So, for example, if you're in a tea garden, right, back in Assam, you would want to wear a smart glass, and the smart glass might want to enable you to see what is the level of fertilizer, the way the fertilizer is impacting my leaves.
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
So essentially amalgamation of data into visual form, and it triggers off that content the moment you look at a certain patch of land or certain. So the process that has happened in not a classical agriculture really, right. But in the tea industry, is that you identify different kind of leaves, right?
Right.
And different kind of leaves are different depending on the color codes.
Right.
It really depends on how much fertilizer has gone into them, right? So depending on the color codes, you create a database and you create a visual rendition of the database, right? And the moment you put on a glass or put on a scanning device, right? And you point it on or probably plug it on a drone. And let that fly over a patch of land or a patch of a tea state, is going to immediately understand those markers, right? And give you that data point immediately, saying that, hey, right? And also there are pilot projects which are running, which essentially allows you to see what is the water content in your soil, right?
Right.
And allows you to make a smarter decisions. Though a lot of these larger examples of using drones, using satellite data, using robotics, using AI, using XR, right? They all actually form part of an ecosystem we now call spatial computing, right? So specifically, there are some very specific use cases. There are some specific use cases. For example, there is this use case in Indian Navy, for example, right? Okay. So if you're a new trainee, you can, before even you onboard a ship, right? You can actually put on a VR glass or a HoloLens or any VR device, right? And you can actually see yourself on a boat. You're going towards a large ship and you onboard that ship and you essentially will react to situations where things, okay, where the ship is on fire or what protocols you have to follow without getting onto the ship.
So these are, and again, essentially...
These are used for training, induction, sales support. Remote training is one of the key areas now of using VR, where you are sitting in one location, somebody else is sitting on another location. Then in Kerala, people use it for telemedicine, for example, right?
Okay.
You use a VR device, the doctor is somewhere else, you use your device to understand what the patient is going through. Right. And then you advise the patient, say, from some 100 kilometers away on, on how do you give the right advice to the guy who's sitting there, but using an XR device, right?
Right.
So there are multiple use cases in healthcare, in agriculture, in industrial application, in manufacturing, where especially in automotive, as to if you need to design a particular spare parts and you don't have that with you, how can you immerse somebody else who is not there in the location with you, right? And then get them to jointly work with you to find a solution, right? So there have been multiple use cases on XR, on VR, on enterprise, consumers, right? In the sense that if you're looking at standout use cases, most of them are standout use cases because you need to use them seriously to find a solution. But the challenge, especially in the Indian market, especially in XR, has been that the lot of larger experiences are limited to a POC, right?
Correct.
You use a POC and that's where it ends, right?
Right.
But unfortunately, you see a push now where you've seen a lot of these conversations on enterprise use cases are actually going through because budgets have opened up. People see that, hey, if you need to really work from home, how can you use technology to remote monitoring, to train workforces and bring them together digitally in one platform? So that's happening. And you'd find a whole host of them if you look for, and there are a lot of platforms which you will find a lot of interesting use cases across these categories.
Crazy. Thanks a lot. Like, that was seriously like an eye-opener in terms of how things are changing around us.
Yeah.
We just have last 5 more minutes. What I want to understand, one thing which I would like your view on is, if there was only one word for marketing, right? How would you define marketing?
Immersive.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, a few things. The world is getting phigital, right?
Yeah.
We are moving towards an experience economy.
Right.
Consumer marketing journey is finally omnichannel. Right.
Right. Right.
Videos have made a comeback. Right. And everything that you want to do, you want to experience it. But unfortunately, you have got a physical problem in going out there and experiencing it. Right. So the only way is to create, either you use immersive tools, immersive content, immersive platforms. So marketing at the end of the day has become immersive. Finally, probably we are still scratching the surface, but yeah, right. Marketing is immersive.
Awesome. And yeah. So COVID-19 and the entire situation around this, right? We were even talking just before we started. It has actually pushed us ahead in terms of our technology usage and everything. Like, there were companies earlier I know of who would resist digital transformation, who would resist. They would have bought tools. Like, example is, they would have bought maybe a license of Microsoft Teams for their entire organization, but no one would actually use it. But now they were forced to use it and now they cannot live without
it. Correct.
So how do you think, where are we like in this whole digital push, which is sped up because of COVID-19? It is obviously good, but is there any downside to this? What can you tell me about that?
I don't see any negative side to it, right? Because I feel that, but as I told you in the beginning as well, that you need to find a balance, right?
Sure.
Because please understand that everybody is working from home, right? There is a sameness to what you do every day, right?
Sure.
Obviously, digital tools are created to ensure that you're more efficient, you're more productive, and you contribute to the organization that you're working for, right? But the point is, you shouldn't use a tool to track somebody or tool to say that, hey, please sign in from 9 to 9 or 9 to 8. You're not working in an office.
Or you're in front of the camera the entire
time. Exactly. So it is, you need to find a balance. There has to be a coherent policy of obviously a lot of organizations are saying you do a WFH permanently until 2022, 2021. But end of the day, if you're doing WFH, right, there are after effects of it. Right. Because you are 24/7 in front of the monitor,
right?
You're sitting in front of something where you're constantly getting irritated because you're doing the same thing. You can't go out. You can't talk to people.
Sure.
And blah. So there are multiple unseen challenges that we see that probably doesn't happen when you are in office. right? Nice. So maybe, I think, as I said, it is good that the practitioners of digital business probably have got their revenues up multiple X because of COVID, right? Right? As I said, COVID has created opportunities for innovation. People have made that push and it has created opportunities, as I said, for people in the immersive tech business, in the digital tech. People like, we are having conversation on Zoom. Zoom has become $1 billion platform and stuff like that. But the point is, you need to find a balance, right?
Sure.
And that balance is important. Either you WFH or you WFO, right? So either at all, right?
You work with technology and you are, you know, immersed in it. What is the non-technology side of, like, how do you spend time away from technology?
Books, music, that's about it. There is, you can't do much because there are a lot of restrictions when you move out.
Right.
But yeah, probably one thing that I started doing is cycling a lot.
Okay.
Right. Because awesome. That allows you to discover, self-discovery sometimes comes from cycling because you explore new places at your own pace. And I think to slow down a bit, digital has obviously made you faster, but I think our lives have become more tepid. So music has been an aphrodisiac at a certain level. Books, I really like reading physical books.
I love it, and
that's about it, really. There is nothing much that you can write home about. And yeah, these are 3-4 things that I do.
No, it's been more than a pleasure talking to you.
Absolutely. Same here, man. Same here.
Thanks a lot for coming and sharing this time with us.
Yeah.
I personally got to understand a lot better these things, the technology side of AR, VR, XR. And I am really grateful for that. So hoping to do something on a similar line, maybe again in the future.
Absolutely.
Let's see where we go with this. Thanks a lot. And guys, next time I would also ask you guys to, you know, join us for another session of Dude, Where's My ROI?
With this, we come to an end of another episode of Dude, Where's My ROI? In our next episode, we hang out with Ramalingam Subramaniam, an engineer turned brand marketer who has worked with brands such as Coca-Cola, Cipla, and today works as head of brand and communications with CoinDCX. He works towards spreading much needed knowledge in the world of cryptocurrency. You heard that right. Be sure to tune into the next episode where we ask Rama, dude, where's my ROI?